The Instructor Podcast with Terry Cook, talking with leaders, innovators, experts and game changers about what drives them.
Welcome to the Instructor Podcast. This is a show that helps you become an even more awesome driving instructor and run a better driving school. As always, I am your jolly northern host, Terry Cook. I'm delighted to be here, but I'm even more delighted that you have chosen to listen, because we are continuing our In Conversation series with the wonderful Diana Todd. And today we are tackling the topic of driving schools, in particular, how and why Diana launched support, the problems she's faced, the advice she will give, and we're even talking about the elephant in the room, which is that knobhead that joined and then left. But just before we get stuck into that, I want to point you in the direction of the Instructor Podcast Premium. If you enjoy this content, you will get so much more from the premium. We speak to some of the best in the industry and outside of the industry to help you run a better business, be a more confident instructor, and even get yourself a bit mentally and physically healthier as well. So head to the show notes, you'll find a direct link to sign up. You can get a 3 weeks trial, or you can even sign up for a year and get a 16% discount. But for now, let's get stuck into the show. All right, so we're delighted to be joined by the second edition of In Conversation with Diana Todd, by the actual Diana Todd. How are we doing, Diana?
I'm really good, thanks. How are you?
Still all the better seeing the ultimate of your face. But today we are talking about driving schools and running a driving school, because in the last recording we did, in episode one, you spoke about how you never wanted to run a driving school.
Yeah.
Now you run a multi-car driving school.
Yeah.
So I suppose initially, tell me why you didn't want to run a driving school and then why that changed.
Oh, that's... I'm going to start off by saying that's a great question again, and one I might have a long-winded answer for. I think my whole life, some of the best jobs I've had have been where I've worked independently. I'm responsible for what I'm doing, and everybody else doesn't affect me. It's not a reflection on me. It doesn't bother me. I've always been quite happy about that. And I saw the driving school, any other job that I've had where I've had to manage people or I've had to lead them in some way has just really impacted just my day-to-day life and everything all about. It is just, just impacted me and my work ethic. So I came into this for a work-life balance. I am a bit of a people pleaser. I don't like to say no if I can avoid it. Hence why, I say yes to an awful lot of things. So I think it naturally came about. Again, I've been very fortunate, and I always remember somebody said to me, "Oh, you're very lucky." And I said to them, "The harder I work, the luckier I become." And that's always stuck by me. And I think that's testament to this as well, because I didn't come into it. I wanted that whole work-life balance and everything else. Now, Sophia's getting a bit older, a little bit more independence. And Phil actually had his driving school, and then he wanted to expand it. And then he talked to me about supporting him with the training in this area. And he's lovely, feel free to edit this out, but he is lovely. And he's so, again, compassionate about making sure that the person he's asking help from is looked after in a way, made sure that they're not being taken advantage of. And he came back to me saying, "Actually, Diana, hang on a minute, it doesn't sit right with me that I start this school and you do all the training and the hard work and I reap the rewards. How would you feel about us doing it together?" And I'm a yes person. And I trust him. I just trust him. He's just lovely and helpful and caring. And I thought, if I'm ever going to do it, then he's the person I want to do it with, you know. And obviously, that's where it stemmed from. And we asked you if you would join.
Do you know what, right, on that? It's interesting because we were talking before about like egos and stuff like that, and we've all got an ego. And I know how mine works, and I control it quite well. But I can feel sometimes when my ego does get negatively affected. And there's been a few things this year where it's almost been the opposite. So, three quick examples. You asking me to join support was huge. It's like, because this was a negative part in that I don't often get asked to do something. I'm the one that creates the thing and asks other people to come along. So you asking me to join support was massive. It was like a massive external validation. It was like, oh, wow. They want me to come and not just be part of the driving school. They want me to co-own it. Mm-hmm. That says what you think of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then a couple of us that I said I'd mention. So Stuart Lockery asking me to go and present at the Scottish Expo was big, because I've been asked to present at the Intelligent Instructor Expo before, but there's an element there of, and no offense to anyone, that like they ask a lot of people, you know. And I also think that there's an element there of Intelligent Instructor knowing that the podcast is quite big, and they get some promotion through that. But I think that Stuart asking me to go to Scotland was a massive pat on the back for me. And then also one that's not come out yet, so I can't talk much about it, but Dan Hill asked me to work on a project with him. And he specifically said, I do not want you to come along to be a host. I want you to come along to contribute. And that felt really heartwarming. So yeah, those things. I think the biggest one is obviously support. So, you know, I suppose it's a good opportunity for me now just to, I don't know, thank you a little bit for that opportunity, because like I say, it meant something.
Yeah. It's interesting because it was a no-brainer to me. And when I talked to Phil about it, forgive me if I'm speaking out of turn, but I believe you had reservations about joining because you thought me and Phil would be a little sort of clique, for want of a better word. That's not quite appropriate. And I had reservations. So I was like, you two are really good friends. So I was like, and what I loved, I loved it. And I actually didn't think you would do it. I was like, because I think so highly of you, I didn't think you would do it. And your voice note when you said you would is one of my favourite voice notes ever. And I think we did a little happy dance. But what I obviously left, and we'll come to that in a bit, but I think what I love about the fact that we asked you to come in support, and it was very much a collaboration, is I think we had a chance to become friends and get to know each other a bit better. I am so mindful of other people's time and the impact that I have on them by reaching out to them. I don't often reach out to people because I don't want impact on them. And I think just through the fact that we had support, we had a chance to get to know each other a bit better. So I will be forever grateful for that.
And, you know, it's interesting. It goes back to what we were talking before about trust. There's a big part of that there. And I don't know if I call it a reservation necessarily about the click almost for you and Phil, but there was an awareness there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think what I would say is I was prepared in case it happened. I think that was it. It wasn't going to stop me, but it was interesting. And like I said, we'll come back on my left potentially, but let's talk a bit about the driving school to begin with, because there's going to be people out there that are listening to this that are maybe considering driving schools or wondering what goes into it. You know, and this is something I can actually contribute to as well, I suppose, but what have you found challenging? What's been hard about creating and then running this multi-car driving school?
That's a great question. I need to stop saying that because you're going to ask me lots of them. I'm now drawing a line under it. I'm never going to say it again. Soz.
I can live with that because now I'm not going to wonder if the others were crap.
Exactly. Yeah. I think the biggest challenge is getting instructors to understand the way that we want to train them and develop them and help them is coming from a kind place that's right for them. I think that's the biggest challenge, because you've got schools, no disrespect to them, it clearly works for them, it might not work for the instructor. And that's not me saying that it's our way or no way. We will adapt to the instructor's sort of needs. Of course we will. But we do things quite nichely. And what I mean by that is we will provide you with everything that we think you might ever possibly need to become a driving instructor. And you can dip in and out of that. It's not compulsory by any manner of means. And we started off with a franchise fee that was like this all-inclusive, you know, you will get training, you will get this. And it was a shame because it just, the cost implications of it, but it always came from a good place. It came from, you guys are going to need this training, this support. And really at the detriment, I suppose, financially to us as co-owners. And just to put that into perspective, you know, our franchise fee at that time was £125. £90 of that was given elsewhere to the trainers and the mentors. And the £35 was for Inspire and for the weekly support sessions and for the My Drive Time app and the Honest Truth and everything else. So literally as co-owners, we earned minus something like that. So from a business perspective, it wasn't the sort of best business model, but it came from a kind, caring, compassionate place. But from the PDI's perspective, they're like, hang on a minute, I've to pay £125 a week? Are you joking? And that's before I'm even on a pink badge. And it just, trying to get that message across, I think, was our biggest struggle. So then we kind of had to do a blended halfy-halfy, you know, that is an option. That is going to make you a really awesome driving instructor, but it may cost you more in the long run. And, you know, that's something we had to balance out. And then we have the sort of traditional, if you like, franchise fee, but with a caveat. It really, and I think everybody that has come to us so far recognises that training is not secondary to delivering driving lessons. Sorry, my dog is going off his head trying to get treats.
I was actually thinking I'm gonna say that anyone listening to this that wants stunning conversation with series on them, I need to get a dog because Diana has got an awesome dog, and I love this little pup.
He's just...
I'm so happy. Like, I think I might make some more episodes just so I could stay here a bit longer.
But yeah, I think. I've lost my train of thought because he's like begging me for treats. I think that we've had to sort of marry up people's finances expectations along with the schools that are saying you can become a driving instructor for £1,900 or whatever it may be, and educating them on the fact that that's just not a reality. I actually don't know anybody that has solely paid that amount of money and become a driving instructor. So I think that's been my biggest challenge.
It's interesting because I think that was probably mine. Mm-hmm. Well, somewhat similar. The phrase I have is getting the people to fit into the business. Mm-hmm. So when you think about a driving lesson, because that's what the core of people listening will be aware of, that driving lesson is based around that pupil. When you think of training the PDI, that training session is largely based around the pupil. Yes, there are things we know they need to learn, but it's largely based around them. You can't completely run the business like that. There has to be limitations. There has to be rules. And whether that is you or us saying that we will only take people on and want to invest in their CPD, or whether it's a financial decision, we can't treat the people as 100% individual for the business. We treat them as individuals individually, but in the business, there has to be an element of the fit into this.
Yeah.
And I found that really challenging because, you know, as an instructor and as someone that trains people, I'm used to just working with an individual. And then when you run that business with multiple people, it has to be both. It has to be, this is managing the group and this is managing the person.
Yeah.
And yeah, I found that really challenging.
Yeah. I think we're really lucky in the fact that we have the mentors, and the mentors are people.
I'm interrupting. I need to interrupt there. It's not luck. You've chose that. That's how you planned it.
True.
That isn't luck. That's you saying, this is how we want to do this.
Yeah. Yeah. You make a really good point, actually. Yes. But I think we are fortunate that they said yes. They're the ones that chose to align themselves with our vision and what we're trying to achieve. So we've got lots of people out there sort of flying the flag for what we want to do in the industry. And because of that, that then attracts the right type of instructors. Mm. And we've got inquiries. And I think that's why I spend so much time with people that inquire to become a driver instructor. I spoke earlier because we've had lots of lovely conversations, so I can't remember if it was on air or not, but about a lovely lady I spoke with yesterday about why she absolutely needs to do her research and take stock of what's right for her. Because if it's purely financial in terms of the attraction, then it's going to be short-lived. Because often those are kind of like an attention-grabbing price. It's just not reflective of what you will actually likely to need to qualify.
What have you learned so far by running a school and multi-car school? Because I think actually it's worth clarifying here, because you mentioned the mentors before. So the way support works is you've got a bunch of them awesome mentors/trainers, you know, the different roles, but that largely look after the PDIs that come in. So it's a slightly different structure to a lot of schools, but it did mean from day one, you immediately had this bunch of 20 mentors that you look after. So what have you learned? What's been what have you learned since that?
What have we learned? I think I've learned that it's okay to say no to something. I think I've learned that we have to work out a way of communication that is right for everybody, because actually sometimes we offer a lot, like a lot, and that can be off-putting and overwhelming to people. So I think we have to communicate that there's an expectation that you commit to some CPD, but not all that's available to you. And I think that's really important, because support and overwhelm can so easily get mixed. I think I've also learned that we need to take a step back a little bit and let the mentors do their awesome job. At the moment, I'm so busy making sure I do right by everyone that I'm in danger of not necessarily doing right by everyone. So, you know, I'm taking the fact that we've just come out of the summer holidays and there was various different priorities and stuff. And I think what I've learned in that instance is to make sure that I just manage that a little bit better and share with people what my priorities are going to be, and help the mentors understand that in advance of what their priorities might need to be as well. and take a little, when I say a step back, and I need to be really clear about that actually, taking a step back appropriately, not stepping back and just sitting and going, right, over to you peeps, but just giving them a chance to grow, develop, but like we do with our learners that are coming to the busier roundabout the first time, being there as a support. Like they can text. We have a fantastic little network on Slack that we all sort of check in with each other. We have a support Facebook group. We check in with the instructors and the mentors every single week. Bar one, for some reason. We'll talk about that in a bit. But we also check in with the mentors separately and the instructors separately as well to make sure they have their own private space to share stuff. And they know that, if they don't know now, they certainly will know after this podcast that they can text, they can call, they message. I got an awesome little update from Donna Renwick up in Scotland the other day with an instructor that she was supporting. And it's just little nuggets of information that, you know, she didn't share in the group, but she did share with me. And it's going back and forth and making sure that they have that resource as well.
I mean, you mentioned before about one of me and you also worked together and got to know each other, which was good. But one of the things I love about you is that you own when you make a mistake.
Yeah.
You know, and you kind of touch on some of the things you've learned there and the struggles. It's like, I've always liked that from you. You'll openly go, yeah, do you know what? Balls out. Great. Here's what I've learned from it. Here's what I'll go next. And I think that's such a great quality. But like support driving schools, still very new. It's not even a year old yet. It's like, well, in January, we kind of made it official. So 9 months, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Less realistically, 8 months. But I think I definitely wanted to ask this question because I think it's easy to get further on and get to 10 years in and then start offering advice to people. But at that point, you're like millionaires, you know, and talking to people that are just starting out. So while it's this fresh, if someone was thinking of expanding a driving school, you know, or growing or starting or whatever word you want to use, their own driving school, what advice might you give to them?
Oh, I think care. Just care, actually. Care about doing it right. Care about the people that are coming into your school. Don't just take any instructor because they've inquired. Care about the pupils that you're going to put that instructor in the car with. Care about the progress of the company, because actually the instructors that you're coming into that environment might want to be developed. They might not. And that's okay as well. Show genuine care, compassion and interest before setting up the school. It shouldn't be based on finances. It shouldn't be based on money. Because I think as soon as you go down that route, and when obviously you need to feed yourself and you need to, you know, it has to be worth the amount of hours that you're putting in. And I think that's where there has to be a nice balance. But if you start off by caring from everybody that is coming into your business, then they will care about you and they will grow with you. And the learners will grow with you and the finances will take care of themselves. That's why I was never really that bothered about the 125 rate, because even though we were making minus money, I was like, that will work itself out eventually, because as they grow, we will grow. And I think it's also important to make sure that you give back. So as the company does grow, hopefully, fingers crossed, that we start to give back in some way. Now, I'm ad-libbing here, so Phil will probably tell me off.
Well, I think I would chuck a caveat in there, which would be that ideally don't work for minus figures.
Yeah, don't work for minus figures. But I think there's an element when you start off you have to put your money where your mouth is as well. And it's all very well, like, having a name of trust in this industry, and some people could potentially ride on those coattails, but we wanted a school that was different. We wanted a school that genuinely cared about you getting it right, regardless of what that meant for us.
Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about franchises and the franchisees, because there's a lot of negativity around being a franchisee. Follow a TikTok channel. I don't follow many, usually about dogs or Tom Holland. But I follow one, I think I want to get on a podcast actually, who's very, very anti sort of franchise and talks about how we get out of contracts and all this stuff. And it fascinates me, the negativity around it. And I think something that me, you and Phil didn't agree 100% on, I think you and Phil kind of bit more to one side, I was the other, was the idea of what a franchise is.
Mm.
And I don't think we were way off. But for example, I remember quite early on saying, I don't want to provide students. No, that's not right. It's not, I say I don't want to provide students for the franchisees. It's not right. So that's not the priority for me.
Yeah.
That was never the priority. Yes, I want to do it. But it's very low on my list of priorities. For me, the franchise is about providing what we can offer, which is what we can guarantee, which is, you know, the CPD, the training, the support, you know, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The access to different people and to different road safety networks and this kind of stuff. That was the franchise. We provide the business. They then run that aspect of the business, which involves getting their own students. For clarity, I'm not saying that we wouldn't provide students. I know that you and Phil had that student a bit higher up in the list of priorities, so we still had it.
Yeah.
Maybe just different parts on that list. And we're just taking a quick break from today's conversation to tell you about the Instructor Podcast Premium. If you're enjoying these chats and want to take your development even further, Premium is where you'll find over 200 hours of exclusive content. Everything from 5-minute quick wins to deep dives and 3-hour expert sessions. You'll get access to our entire back catalogue, workbooks to help you put ideas into action. And if you join the interactive tier, you can jump on live coaching calls, Q&As, and even watch podcasts recorded live. It's all designed to help you become an even more awesome driving instructor and run a better business. So, if you want less noise and more action, head to theinstructorpodcast.com or check the link in the show notes. But for now, back to the episode. Just going back to the idea of being a franchisee, why do you think there's such a negative stigma around that?
I think at the moment, where we are in an industry of plenty, where learners are still, you know, looking out to get a driving instructor in this high demand area, if we only focus on providing pupils, then the franchise fee is useless because they can do that themselves, most likely. I think that pupils, certainly when you're coming into the industry, is something that they worry they won't be able to get. So therefore, it needs to be high up in the priority to confirm that you're going to get them. Ultimately, they probably will be able to get them themselves. You know, I'm putting that out there because we're in an industry where if you're semi-decent, you've got a list of pupils. I think where the franchise can be super helpful is when it's all the other stuff that becomes, you know, that you need to do as a driving instructor. Things like communicating and sorting the advertising and the marketing, the social media, the managing of the diary. I'm not saying we manage your diary, but we certainly help you manage your diary and get the use out of it. Awkward conversations, things where, you know, there can be communication breakdowns with the pupils and the learners, and having that support network to be able to say, no, actually, your instructor's right. We're not going to take you to test, and here's some of the reasons why. But what we will do is this. And it's helping facilitate that and being that impartial figure to support you with that. And also, even when you passed, God, even, like, I think in 10, 15, 20 years' time, I'm still learning. I learn every single day. And if you're part of a community where you share the same ethos and you've got the same values, you're going to learn from the right type of people as well. Whereas opposed to going off on some kind of solo mission and you're in this little silo where you don't know if you're doing right, wrong, or anything in between, really. And all of those things take time, energy, thinking power. And as I think I've got across on every single like conversation we've had, this job is hard. You need a little bit of downtime. And I think that's where the franchise fee can really come into its own. If you feel truly supported and valued, then it's negligible.
I think I agree. And going back to what you first said about it shouldn't just be providing students. If you look at the people that complain about franchises, that's often their go-to. It's just get your own students.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, well, if that's all your franchise providing you with, then yeah. If that's what you want from a franchise, that's different. But for me, I've used this example before, but McDonald's is a prime example. McDonald's don't provide the franchisees that own the stores. They don't provide them with customers.
Yeah.
They provide them with the support and the resources to get customers. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what a franchise should do. Should we provide the learners when they need them? Yes, of course. But we can't give them learners. We have to get the learners. So therefore, we provide advertising or whatever the way of doing it might be. But I think that's what a franchise is. It's not just providing customers. It's providing the support and the resources to get customers and be the best business they can be using that banner, whether that's support or McDonald's or Greg's or whatever the franchise is, using that banner as a way to attract. And knowing that at some point, the owner of that McDonald's store may leave and go and start up their own restaurant called McMood's. And the owner of support franchise may leave to go and start up their own one, supportless, I don't know, whatever. You know, and accepting that and helping them do it.
Yeah.
That was the other thing that we spoke about. It's like, if someone wants to leave, let's help them leave.
Yeah.
Let's make them go and run the best business they can because they'll recommend us. Yeah. We want to make it so people don't want to leave, but people will. Let's support them do that. And I think that's missing. I think that's part of where that negativity comes from.
Yeah. Completely agree. And I think actually I've got some fabulous relationships with people that have gone and set up their own business. Okay, fair enough, it was before I had the driving school, but they are the ones singing my praises to everybody else because I helped them qualify and they set up their own school. But that said, I think that there's an element of having that sort of that community environment. It can be such a lonely job. Sometimes I always liken it to working from home compared to working in an office. And you know when you're in the office and something really simple crops up that you don't know the answer to, very easy for you to then just ask a question from somebody at the next cubicle or, you know, just down the corridor or whatever. It's very different if you're working from home and you've got to make a phone call to somebody. Because actually, that feels like a much bigger deal and often won't be asked, ever. And it just kind of goes by the by. Whereas with support, you've got so many opportunities to be in that office environment where you can get answers to the questions you didn't even know you had because other people are asking them. Mm. And I think that's important. When you're on your own, you just don't know if your ship is just being turned slightly to the left and going completely off course. And I think that's what's quite helpful about being part of a franchise.
Yeah. So speaking of ships being turned slightly to the left, potentially leaving support.
Yeah.
Do you think we should talk a bit about some knobhead that left?
I would love to talk about that knobhead that left.
Yeah. Do you have any questions on that?
Yeah, why did you do it?
I'd like to think you've got a rough idea. I spent long enough talking to you about it. So I'll be honest with this. I think it might benefit people to share this, actually. That I, as I said earlier, I was really, really happy and touched that you asked, and I love the concept. I love the idea of doing something different. and being the different driving school, and I'll be honest, you know this, I love the idea of scaring the big boys. I didn't know if it ever beat White Red or, you know, anything like that, but I love the idea that we could actually make them look over their shoulder and go, oh crap,
yeah,
there's someone over there that's doing something good, and we're actually quite crap compared to them. I love that idea. But I learned something about myself pretty quick that I should have probably acted on early, if I'm being honest with you. And that is, when I'm working with people and I have people dependent on me, so in support's case, you and Phil, maybe dependent might be the wrong word, but reliant might be a better word. You and Phil, it was the mentors, it was the PDIs, it was the ADIs, and then also the learners as well.
Yeah.
Dependent on me, I go into a mode of neglecting my needs and prioritizing those needs. I should also chip in here, actually, if I'm being honest. I have got all kinds of issues, right? I've mental, physical, emotional. I've been a wreck for years, right? Now, I don't think I'm a wreck in the way of, like, I'm a disaster, although it feels like it at times. But there are things that crop up now and again that just like to throw a spanner in the works. And that's one of them. You know, it was, so for me, what I found myself doing was massively prioritizing support. Not just in terms of workload, and to clarify, this is my brain, not support.
No, I hear you.
But not just in terms of workload, but in terms of thinking time.
Yeah.
You know, I've always valued my thinking time. I did a wonderful recording recently with Dino Tartelli where we spoke about that. But I've always valued that. And what I found was, like, on a morning, I'll go and do my first lesson at 10 a.m. And there'll be an hour in the morning where I either go outside or pace around the flat, and that's me getting prepared for the day. It's planning what I'm going to do. It's thinking, getting ideas for future. And I found that all that time was being designated to support.
Yeah.
And as such, as a driving instructor, I was suffering. I started struggling in terms of the students. You know, people were passing. I wasn't replacing them. And I found myself cancelling the odd lesson, not like short notice.
Yeah.
But like, oh, this Friday, I could do a meeting with support. Right, I'll drop those lessons, I'll tell them, and they were fine with it, you know, I won't mess anyone about. But it was prioritizing that. It was also let it infringe on the personal time. So I've always been good at delegating time, divvying time up. So, you know, someone reaches out to me now and says, Terry, you're free for a chat. I'll be like, in fact, someone has this week, someone literally, Terry, I've got an opportunity for you. Can we talk about it? Yeah, next week.
Mm-hmm.
Literally, it's what I said. If I miss it, I miss it. That's when I'm free. I'm not free this week. I'm busy. But during the time with support, someone reached out to me. It's like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And it will be giving up an evening, giving up an afternoon, whatever. Yeah. And that's on me, again, just to clarify. But I think it started to affect every aspect of my life. And then this was a big part of it. And then I got to a point where I was just struggling. So I was struggling financially because, again, we spoke about the money that support was making. I remember I said it when my first meeting with you guys, but you guys knew it anyway, which was, we aren't making out this year.
Yeah.
You know, we know that because anything we do make will be reinvested back in.
Absolutely.
But obviously putting time into support and taking out of my business means I'm not earning money elsewhere. So that affected me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I realized it was affecting me. And because my brain's an interesting place anyway, like I had some stuff go on. I had some personal stuff go on. I don't know if I told you about this. I can't tell the story on the episode, but I had someone smash up my flat.
Oh my God.
Did I not tell you that?
No.
Well, that's a great story for when I stopped recording. But yeah, I had that happen. And you know, all this kind of stuff that just built up and there were other little things I was finding annoying in the industry as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
I won't name them because they're less annoying now I'm out of the situation, but little things that were just starting to really bug me. And I got to a point where I was going to bed all night. I think I don't really want to wake up tomorrow. Just because it's like, I don't want to do it again.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to keep doing this slog. And I'm like, I need to change something before I do something stupid.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm like, right, the thing that needs to change is support. You know, and it's such a shame because I would have loved to have stayed and I think I contributed while I were there. I would have loved to have stayed and continue contributing and continue working with people, helping it grow and But I'm like, it's that thing where you need to look after yourself, you know. And I kind of joked before about being millionaires, but I genuinely look at it that way. Like I've just blown a massive financial opportunity by walking away. I know that, you know, just being honest. Business opportunities, financial opportunities, opportunities for all kinds of stuff in the future. By walking away, I've taken a lot of those opportunities away. But by not walking away, I don't know where I would have been, essentially. So yeah, I needed just to step away, look after myself, get myself right. Because even when I look at this year, 2025, my goal for this year, so I had a few goals. One was not to be as busy. Yeah, that was ruined by about the 5th of January. Thanks for that. But my goals for this year, my two big goals were to evolve TC Drive, my driving school,
mm-hmm.
and to develop me as an instructor, as a person, as a coach. You know, I wanted to do a psychology degree, open university. I wanted to do the Bright Coaching Diploma, all this stuff. And I did not have time for that.
No.
And again, that it's not having time I left, but it was all this stuff that just built up. And with my brain as weird and wonderful as it is, I struggled. And I remember dropping you guys a voice note. It's like, it's not I break up with someone, is it? But it's how I did it. That morning.
You break up with us.
I think quite a long voice note as well, just explaining what we're what. And you guys were awesome, you and Phil. You know, straight away dropping me some messages back, arranged a chat straight away. Super understanding, super helpful. Made you both cry.
Did Phil cry?
I like to think it.
Yeah.
Don't spoil it for me. You're listening, Phil. Don't tell me you didn't cry.
I always cry when Terry tells me he's leaving me. There you go, see?
But yeah, so, you know, what we, and you guys are awesome with that. And I think I said to you at the time that I will always support and, you know, happy to contribute any way I can. But it was something I needed to step away from to look after myself and look after my own sanity. And again, I know I've said it a couple of times, but I feel like I need to repeat it. That's not a reflection on support.
I get that.
It's a reflection on my brain. I don't regret doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know it was going to affect me that way. If I'd known, I probably would have, I still would have come in, but I would have come in a different way.
Yeah.
Because I can remember when I did come in, actually, I said I can't commit properly till April. Probably said I can't commit properly till 2026. Even if I'd known properly, but... But yeah, there you go. So that's...
And then you worked your backside off, though. Because when April hit, I mean, even before April, you were working your backside off for support. Because I think that might be, forgive me if I'm wrong, just the way your brain works. It's like you don't want to let people down, even though there was zero expectations. I'm very much the same. Like, very much the same. And you were always mindful of that with me. And I think... It was good because you held me accountable for the things that I would do. I'm always very wary, though, that literally the day before you dropped that voice note, I dropped about 5 messages, voice notes, you name it, just before, just with lots of wee bits and pieces that we had going on with support. And I was like, if I tipped him over the edge, oh my gosh, was it me? And you were clear that it wasn't. And it wouldn't have been because it was literally the night before. But I think there was something that I was going to say there. Oh, I've forgotten it. But I think as well, I admire the fact that you left. I really admire the fact you left. And I know that sounds, I was gutted. Like, I think, well, you could tell because I was crying, legitimately. But I admired it because I admired you taking the time out for yourself, and I think that's dead important. And I think that actually comes back to the fact that I said earlier, we care about you, we care about the people that work with us, and I'm glad that you left in the nicest possible way. Because it was the right thing for you. And also, sorry, I've just remembered what I was going to say. Also, you are still helping the business grow. You're helping the instructors grow because they're listening. They're listening to your podcast. They're developing themselves. You were instrumental in planting the foundational seeds of support. which will always be there. So I think that's important to recognise as well.
I'll be like the guy that Mark Zuckerberg sell Facebook, then Mark Zuckerberg become a billionaire.
I'll wave to you from my mansion.
Yeah, thanks. Buy me a shed. But no, it's interesting. Like I don't do much with mantras. Mm-hmm. I tend to think of them a lot and then forget them, but I don't do much. But I've got two that are pinned on my wall. Well, I wrote them pinned on my wall. It's the work you do when people are watching that counts.
Mm.
And I stand by that because I do work hard. Even like away from support, I work hard. But I think when it's just me, I'm able to reason that and able to go, yeah, do you know what? You get a Friday off this week. You're allowed that.
Yeah.
But when I've got people dependent on me, I think now I might be able to do it. Mm. You know, with a different project, I'll be able to work with someone, you know, whatever. But I think that at the time in particular, and I would still find it hard now, but at the time in particular, I couldn't justify winning a day off.
Yeah.
Because, well, these people, you know, Phil, Diana, the mentors, the ADIs, the PDIs, the learners, they're dependent. You know, I have to make sure that this, you know, this or whatever. But you know, I'm going to give a little shout away, actually. And I don't think this will offend anyone. I'll let you tell me afterwards. But shout out to Stuart Lockery, because when I joined support, I got a bunch of messages from people, but there was only one person that sent me a message that was purely congratulations. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there were some messages that said congratulations, but there were caveats or there were, what about this? Or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. But one person sent me a message just like, congratulations. And that was Stuart. And when I left, there was only one person that kind of said, are you okay? There were a few people that, you know, five questions sent me, they were left, but there were only one person did both, is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
That the pure positive message and the pure check-in message, there are a few that did one, but there was only one that did both, and that was Stuart. So a little shout out to Stuart there.
He's awesome, though.
He does all right.
He's really awesome. Like, I have, but anyway, it's not the Stuart Lockery show, so we'll just. I'm joking.
I don't think he's advertised on this episode, so that's his point. but yeah, so that was it. That was why I left. It's, you know, I've been pretty honest with that. And I think that my advice, no one's asked for it. my advice would be for anyone just to, you know, maybe assess your mental capacity before you take on something like this, but also don't be afraid to walk away. I've never been afraid to burn stuff down. You know, it's not, I didn't burn support down, but I've never been afraid to walk away or go, that's not right, or change plans or change tact. I think that it's an underrated skill, actually, is being able to go, this isn't working for a reason, whatever it might be, and either fix it or walk away. I think,
One thing you said earlier that I kind of wanted to touch on was the fact that other people were reliant on you. I actually think of that in positive terms sometimes. I know, I think Phil does as well. And it's almost that accountability where, but it creeps. You know, we talked about that sort of overwhelm and support. We were all there for each other, but we also didn't want to let people down, each other down. And I'm very guilty of that. I'm very guilty of that. I will sacrifice everything personally other than my daughter. And even then, bless her, you know, she's been, it's poor Stuart and bless her. She sometimes, that's just life, isn't it? Kind of gets sacrificed. But I think I like to have the accountability of having somebody reliant on me, and that pushes me, not too much though, because I've said it before, and it's been a big learning curve for me this year. I said it earlier. I have to take that time. So I'm taking some stock from what you did. I'm not, this isn't my way of breaking up with Phil for support, but. And I did it. I did it in August. I did take some time and prioritise my family. And that was important.
Yeah. I think for me, it's not necessarily people relying on me. It was everything I had going on.
Yeah.
You know, it's the thing, the question I get asked the most how do you fit it all in?
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, maybe I should have thought of that before. And to be fair, I did. You know, it's like, I'll be more free from April. And I was, you know, the part of that was because I knew I was changing the podcast. But I think that taking on that, what felt like responsibility with everything else, was a step too much. And yeah, something needed to go. And it was support that demanded the most, no, not demanded, required the most from me going forward. So that was the, you know, the one that had to go, if you like. But like I said, I enjoyed it while I was there. I enjoyed some awesome people, met some awesome people. And you. And I'm glad I did it. Hopefully I've made a little bit of a positive contribution to it. And yeah, best luck going forward.
Thank you.
Do you want to take a moment to remind people where they, I've just spoke about support for ages, but remind people where they can find you?
Yes, I'm going to start with Support Driving School. We offer training for instructors, and of course we're a driving school, so driving lessons as well. All the way down in Devon, Cornwall as well, actually we have some mentors, lovely mentors there, all the way up to Bonnie Scotland. And we also have Inspire Instructor Training, which is a sort of resource-led training platform that you can really sort of finesse and dip in and out of as and when is needed as well.
Excellent. Well, a big thank you for joining us today.
Thank you.
The Instructor Podcast with Terry Cook. Talking with leaders, innovators, experts and game changers about what drives them.